All right. So with us today, we have the marvelous Mitch Altman.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm tired like everyone else.
Yeah,
I'm doing great. Right.
So you've been spending, what, most of your time at the Hardware Hacking Village, right?
Yeah, I barely left it. It's like about 3 square meters. And but it's been tons of fun. Lots of people soldering. That's always a good thing.
It is. That is.
Yeah.
Have you caught any talks this year at all?
No, I caught a bunch of Corey's on the live stream. I wanted to go down there, but I was caught helping people to solder.
Well, you know, duty calls, right?
Yeah. So, but yeah, a lot of talks look really interesting, and all these people were telling me about them. So, yeah, but like with everything else with life, you can only do what you're doing and missing all the rest and making choices.
So it sounds like you've been up to some pretty exciting stuff leading up to HOPE. You've been, I think, what, traveling around and being hacker in residence for several things for, what, the past 18 months or longer?
Yeah, I've been doing that a whole bunch. So right before HOPE, I was in Japan. And there's some guy who's a friend of a friend who is part of a community of people. They brought me out to Sapporo, Japan, to help them start a hackerspace. And they're totally doing it. And I don't know why they had to send me out there. They were ready to do it anyways. They just needed someone to poke them, I guess. So I poked them.
Hey, whatever gets it done, right?
Yeah. And then while I was there, I was giving talks. And then the more I gave talks, the more other people wanted to give talks. And then people actually took planes and trains over to Sapporo and then over to Tokyo to have meetups about starting hackerspaces in those places and in Osaka, in Kumamoto, and a couple other places. So it's a lot of stuff's finally starting to happen in Japan. You know, they had one of the early hackerspaces mm-hmm. there. I thought it would really take off. But Japanese culture is really kind of, in many ways it's very social. You have your obligations to family, to work, to country. You know, but I thought it would spread that way. You just start one hackerspace, and Tokyo Hackerspace started in 2009. And, yeah, it just seemed like it would spread, but it hasn't, because in many other ways, people are really just either at home or at work. And, you know, there's a whole part of town in Tokyo, Akihabara, mm-hmm. which is amazing. They have all these stores where you can buy any electronic part or mechanical thing or models or stuff for drones and robots. But it turns out that all is driven by individual hobbyists.
Huh.
And just individuals, and they're doing way cool things, probably because of all the parts that are sold. They must be doing cool things with them. And but we don't know, because they don't really talk to each other about it, or at least not that I'm aware of. No way I could find, and that's according to Japanese people over there that I know. And yeah, they don't really network. It's starting to happen. I mean, they've had Maker Faire kind of things there, and Design Festa is huge, which all these design things, weird stuff. I've been to them. They're really cool. But you know, just people aren't sharing things like they do in the rest of the world, even in China, so that people can learn from what each other are doing. And people need to get together and start sharing. There's they don't have to be perfect, just share stuff. It's really cool. You can learn from stuff other people are doing, even if it's not complete, even if it's not perfect, just like do here, you know. Here we have a radio station in the middle of one of the most hectic things happening in New York City, the 11th HOPE. You know, and how did this happen? Not because you started with a perfect radio station.
No, we did. We actually did a talk about that on Friday. Definitely has been several iterations and design choices. We actually used to have actual booth walls, and that was a terrible decision for several reasons. Now we have extruded polystyrene literally duct taped together, and that seems to work out pretty well. But like, it's definitely an iterative approach, and it's definitely like that design for the sliding pocket door. It was actually made by somebody named Vader, I think, at HOPE number 9, and then we've kind of been working and improving and reverse engineering in this case, to kind of get that back. So, like, it's definitely, we need to talk together, because Vader hasn't sadly been here for the past two hopes, which has been disappointing.
Yeah, well, like everything else, there's too many cool things to do.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, I flew from Tokyo to here and totally jet lagged. And now I'm just tired because I haven't had enough sleep because there's too many cool things to do at home.
That's true.
So, yeah, before that, I was home for a little less than 2 weeks teaching second, third, and fourth graders how to play with Arduinos. And before that, I was in India for a month teaching kids there. There was a really cool outdoor hacker camp called Hill Hacks up in the Himalayas. Pretty close to where the Tibetans hang out.
Oh, wow.
And there were a lot of schools there that are amazing. These schools have almost nothing. They really get no funding, but they do have buildings, and they have very enthusiastic teachers, and the kids come up to an hour and a half or two-hour walk from their village up and down mountain paths to get there, and they do it because they're into it. Yeah, even though they have very few resources, it's really cool what can happen with very few resources, but with enthusiastic teachers. And they invited us there to teach them various things. So we showed them origami, how to make simple little robots. I showed them, of course, how to solder, and making blinky lights and music synthesizers. Yeah, a bunch of cool stuff. It was really fun. I learned a lot from the teachers, and even some from the students, which is really, yeah, it felt great. A bunch of the students came to our hacker conference as well to do a bunch of things with us.
That sounds awesome. What's next for you? Are you going to be going home after Hope, or are you going back out into the big wide world?
Yeah, well, home is still San Francisco, but I'm pretty much getting used to home being wherever I am. I'll be going from here on Tuesday to Luxembourg. There's 5 hacker camps in Europe this summer.
Oh, wow.
Back to back to back, and every weekend. So there's Haxo Green in Luxembourg, and I'll be going to that one first. And then there's EMF, electromagnetic field. And, of course, it's in a field.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's the London Hackspace people. And I've been to one of their big events, which was Electromagnetic Wave, which was on a boat.
I like these guys. That's really good.
They're great. And, you know, their rule number 0, which I like too, is do not be on fire.
That's, of the rules, that's an important one.
Yeah. So we don't have that one at Noisebridge. We only have one rule, which is be excellent to each other. And we kind of consider not being on fire to be excellent.
Yeah.
So it works for us. But I think be excellent to each other is London Hackspace rule number 1. So, but anyways, after that, there's Fried Camp in Belgium. And after that is Camp Plus Plus in Hungary. And after that is Change Camp in the Polish-German border.
Wow. That's a lot of traveling. So you're going to hit all of those?
I'm going to try. I haven't bought my train tickets yet, but I'll be doing that, when I get to Luxembourg.
That's a lot of... That's crazy.
But yeah, I'm totally insane. But, it has its advantages. When you're insane, you don't have to follow all the rules.
That's true.
Yeah. So you mentioned Hacker in Residence. That's something I've been really pushing for a lot of organizations and people to take advantage of, because it's really growing. People going to either companies or hackerspaces or schools, universities or museums, libraries, all these places are having Hacker in Residence, which is really cool because someone can come either from nearby or from far away, whatever, and just have some space to do whatever cool things they do and share it with the local community there. And then the community benefits from it, and then the Hacker in Residence benefits from learning from that community, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And then we get all this cross-pollination because people either bring it home or bring it to the next place. So, I was Hacker in Residence in Mad Lab Hackerspace in Manchester, UK, for a little more than a month, March and April.
Okay.
And directly before that, I was Hacker in Residence at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, That was February, March. So yeah, it was great. Teaching lots of people how to solder, of course, but hanging out with people. And the cool thing with the University of Illinois, in order to get people to mingle and with the resident, they have tea times, and they advertise it all over the place in the local press, so it's open to the public. People can come and take workshops and hang out. But they have these tea times with various topics. So, of course, I had one about community and hackerspace, and one about being a queer geek, one about travel, one about depression, and, you know, very diverse topics, and they all had very different feels. Different people came. Some people came to all of them. People really give people a safe space to open up, and people open up. It's pretty amazing. So I learned a lot from that, and I look forward to doing that one again if they invite me.
Yeah, that sounds phenomenal. So at the tea times, so it sounded like they were more like a talk, or I'm sure a more of a discussion. But was there actually tea?
Yes, there actually is tea, and the university paid for tea for us.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And cookies.
Oh, well, I mean, how can you have tea without cookies?
Yeah.
It's just, you can't do it.
Yeah. So, and then I'll be Hacker in Residence for a month. After the month of Hacker Camps, I go to Beijing, where I'll be the Hacker in Residence at Tsinghua University. Okay. And I help them set that program up. And I'll be the fourth hacker in residence there.
That sounds really nice, actually. Mm. Yeah.
And they have a budget, too. So they fly you out there, they pay you a bunch a month, and you get access to totally state-of-the-art fabrication tools like that factories use, and people teach you how to use them. And I don't know how to use most of those things, so I'm way looking forward to that. Plus, I get to get a whole bunch of Chinese students together who are just used to taking tests and inspiring them to actually do something cool.
That sounds actually pretty interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that.
Me too.
So between all of your travel, have you been able to work on any projects, or has it just been all travel all the time?
Travel. But I've been working the last several months on my something I've been thinking about for a long time, and finally finding time to do it, and doing it on planes and trains. And while Hacker in Residence, I actually get to work on my projects, which is another great thing about it.
Yeah.
So, it's a music synthesizer, Arduino compatible. It's just a little board with a touch keyboard that is patterned after the stylophone, if you know what that is.
I think so. Yeah, it sounds really familiar.
Yeah, well, it's an old music synthesizer that was portable. It's maybe like 8 inches long, mm-hmm. and easily held in your hand. And it had a stylus, and it made some pretty cool noises and music. So I've loved that thing ever since the 70s, and I wanted to. And they actually started making them again, but now they're expensive rather than $70 like they used to be.
Oh, yeah.
But they're so cool. But my music synthesizer has, it generates sound just with, part of my board is an Arduino. I made my own PC board. Part of the board is the keyboard and a couple of twiddly knobs and buttons, and then a little cheap audio amp built into the board, too. So it's a very inexpensive audio or music synthesizer kit that anyone can put together, and it works. But if you want to, you can look at my documentation, mm-hmm. which I'm still working on and not quite ready to be online, but it'll all be on my GitHub. Most of it's on the GitHub already. Okay. Maltman23, like everything of mine. And you can learn about digital signal processing for audio generation. And it makes really cool, pretty high quality sound for a very inexpensive kit. Right now I have it at $30. And I'd love to make it available for $20, and I think I can do that, but for sure for $25.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds actually really cool.
Yeah, a bunch of people have made it here at Hope at the Hardware Hacking Area.
Yeah. I think I was looking at that. I just noticed it out of the corner of my eye probably last night. I was like, oh, that looks really cool. I should stop and look. I need a thing to do. Like, it's like you're just so busy doing stuff all the time.
Too many cool things to do.
I know, right? So is there anything that you have? Now I've lost my train of thought. Derailed at the station. Oh, man.
It's morning. Not much sleep and hope.
No. Yeah, no, it's gone.
Yeah, wow. It's gone. So, yeah, I haven't been listening to Radio Statler because I've been teaching Friday, Saturday, and a little bit of sleep before I woke up to set up today. So it's been cool people to interview.
Yeah, we've had we had Cory Doctorow in. We have you, obviously.
Cory's great.
He's a phenomenal person. I really appreciated him taking the time to come in. Johnny was really excited, but I think he messed up a little bit. He didn't ask about Open Cola. So
And he didn't bring it up?
No, so Johnny had, like, made a mention of, like, asking about Open Cola. It was, like, something that Cory did in the 90s, and then completely forgot about it.
That's okay. Yeah, there's plenty to talk about anyways.
Yeah. I think his keynote went rather well.
Great.
The interview beforehand was phenomenal. We had a lot of fun and interesting people in. The good news, actually, though, is if you're really interested in listening, is the archive should be everything is should be recorded, and it should be cut up and nicely in neat little packages. Hopefully, in the next month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you have to find the time to.
Yeah, that's the hard part, right?
Put it up online.
Not even putting it up online is the easy part. It's definitely finding it, and then how do you name it and. Who all is in there, because you want to make sure that, you know, people are in there, you have the names.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anything that you missed that you want to listen to, it should be available.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and all the talks for Hope have been live streamed, and they'll be up online before long, too.
Yeah. Actually, if you do the live stream currently, it'll go out to however long that stream is, and you can go back. So it puts it at the end and then keeps extending it. But if you go back, like, on the cursor, it'll put you back at whatever talk was at that specific time, which is pretty nice.
That is nice.
You also, I think, can buy all the DVDs pretty much in real time. Like, after the talk, I think you can get them pretty darn quick afterwards.
Yep, right here at Hope.
Yep. So, we actually have the IRC channel going. Is there anybody that's, any of our listeners have any questions for Mitch? Oh. User Anon39845 says, "Don't worry, I'm recording it myself. I don't have to wait a month." Anon, if there's any way that you can email us, radio@hope.net, in case we have any issues with our actual archive. It's always nice to have a second source to pull from. So if you want to send us an email with a link, that would be very nice of you. We'd be very appreciative.
And the email is?
radio@hope.net. Should be a mailing list, so it'll go out to a bunch of people. I think that email still works. Should probably test that.
I think Darko asked about that on the Orga list earlier, and I think it works.
So it looks like we don't have any questions. Is there anything specifically that you would like to talk about before we set you back to the hardware hacking village?
I don't know. What have I been thinking about lately? I've been giving lots of talks on lots of different topics, many of them technical, many of them how-tos, like how to run a small business, how to do stuff with electronics. For newbies, intermediate and advanced. One of the talks I've given a few times has just gotten better, and I gave this in Japan, was the importance of failure. And you know, as geeks, we all know that you have to fail a lot in order to do cool things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still sometimes way disappointing when things don't work out as expected. But, you know, hacking is all about trying things and seeing what happens and learning from it regardless. And some places and some people need to be reminded of that more often. But you can't do anything cool unless you fail and fail a lot and learn, take the opportunity to learn from those things.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, the mindset that people should really, I think, try to strive for is that failure is okay. You just need to think about why stuff failed and then get up and try it again.
Yeah, if you want to, if it's something you're into. And yeah, so in Japan, that was really important, and because people there, in, you know, it's gross generalities whenever you talk about culture, but there's plenty of exceptions. But in general, people are more afraid of failure there, to the point where they feel they have to be perfect before they present anything to the world.
Oh.
And so people don't even try things because they know they won't be good at it. But how do you get good at something until you try it and learn from all the times you do things and they just don't work out too well?
Yeah. No, you're completely right.
Yep. Got to put your 10,000 hours in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's something I've just been thinking about and stressing when I'm doing stuff. And during the workshops, of course, people make mistakes and everyone feels like they have to apologize. And, yeah, you don't have to apologize for making a mistake. It's part of learning. It's part of life. It's part of what makes life worthwhile is learning from our experience and making things better.
We actually do have a question for you from IRC. How much did you geek out when seeing Tokyo Electric Town for the first time?
Akihabara Electric Town is the full name. Is an amazing part of town. It's really, really large. It's grown into being a huge tourist kind of thing, even for non-geeks, and they have all these things for non-geeky people, like maid cafes, totally bizarre things, and all sorts of other attractions, and people screaming at the front of every store for your attention. I mean, literally screaming. But when I was there the first time, it was mostly just electronics parts stores, and this whole area of town, many, many, many blocks of just parts stores and models and robots and just stuff for hobbyists. You know, people go to work, they may or may not like it so much, and they come home and they do their hobby. That's expected of people. And there's a lot of people doing electronics and doing all sorts of things. But we don't know what they are because people don't share them. It's happening a little bit maybe, but still, these stores still exist. Whereas in the U.S., the only store that really existed was Radio Shack, and even they're gone now, right?
They're not.
They're kind of Sprint phone stores.
No, actually, the one I live less than a mile away from Radio Shack, and it still actually has quite a substantial electronics parts section.
Well, they told me when I talked to the people who run these things that there would be a few stores that have parts, but most of them would just be selling Sprint phones. And my experience walking into the ones in San Francisco is they're all mostly just Sprint phone stores.
Which is disappointing, really.
Yeah, and you can't even get their variety of parts online like you used to. There's some available. So, yeah. But anyways, there's a lot of stuff available online, stuff from China directly with AliExpress. There's lots of amazing things you can buy online, but it's just so much better. Like at Akihabara, we were actually followed around by NHK, which is their big TV network, asking us why foreigners want to go to Akihabara. And they ended up following us for 2 days, and they found out our TV be gone. And, of course, they wanted to video turning TVs off for national TV and Tokyo or in Japan. But anyways, it really is amazing to go to a place where you can actually touch and feel the parts and look at things, get ideas, become inspired to do projects you didn't even know you were going to do until you saw the parts. You know, I do the same thing going to a grocery store. I don't know what I'm going to make for dinner or lunch until I go to the grocery store and see what looks good.
Yeah.
And then I see, oh, wow, the zucchini looks amazing. I'm going to make something with zucchini, and then what else do I want? Oh, I want garlic, and look, the onions are good, and then come together with an idea. And same thing with going to Akihabara. They have a whole pile of surplus DC motors, little DC motors, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, let's make something that moves. And so we have a robot making workshop at Tokyo Hackerspace as a result. That's and that wouldn't have happened if I just looked online for things that I already knew I wanted.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Just having the possibilities in front of you definitely makes ideas, I think, a little more readily come up. But so why do you think, like, in the U.S. we don't have as many parts stores? Is it, like, a density thing, you think? We just don't have enough people where the percentage would actually have, that could actually be there to buy parts is there? Or do you think it's something else?
Yeah, I think it's what you said, plus just a different mindset. People want things inexpensive as possible. That's why Walmarts exist.
Yeah.
Even if it's low quality and it's destroying the lives of people and the vendors and going out of business by trying to keep up with the low prices and all that. People want the lowest price, and you can just get it direct from China, from AliExpress, and you can get amazing things there. But how do actual physical stores compete with that? And real estate and rent, it's really expensive in the United States. And there really aren't so many people in every city who are geeking out, like, in the hobby scene in Tokyo. You know, and then Shenzhen, China has the most amazing electronics stores or just little stalls that sell absolutely everything you want for outrageously cheap prices. But that's mostly for industry, not so much for hobbyists. But, you know, for the DIY scene, it's just turned into all online. There were a few good stores. Like, when I was a little kid, I was in suburbia of Chicago, up north of Chicago, and so I would take a train to Milwaukee, where there was this ham radio store that sold parts, and I could get all the parts I needed to make my own ham radio transmitter and things like that. Of course, they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just go online. I think it's the same reason why bookstores don't really exist so much anymore. I mean, now hardly anybody reads. If they do, they do it on a screen. So there's that reason for that, too. But even before that, bookstores were going out of business because they couldn't compete with Amazon and stores online, where it's just much cheaper to have it delivered to home.
It's true. It really is true. Which it actually makes me really sad that so many of these places I really appreciate, and I think I guess that makes me weird, that I really like buying things in person and going there and being able to see and touch and try things out.
Yeah. And deal with human beings.
Yeah, like who wants to do that? I want to do that all the time. Yeah. I also miss like Blockbuster, like back in high school. Not actually Blockbuster, it was Video Warehouse.
Stores.
But like video stores, because you would go hang out with your friends, you'd have like $10, and you'd just be like, okay, let's go rent like two really shitty, weird Korean horror movies or something, and we'll just watch that, and that's what we'll do, is we'll just eat popcorn, we'll hang out, and we'll, you know, watch these weird, crazy movies. And like, I'm sure Netflix has weird, crazy movies. I almost guarantee it. But, like, finding it and having, like, that experience of going to a place and then being really kind of disconnected because you just kind of, like, we didn't really have cell phones. So you just, you know, it's just you, the people that you're with, and just an excuse to hang out. And I feel like we don't get that as often.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, how do you even know that you want to see a totally bizarre, weird Korean horror movie unless you go to a store and then it just kind of catches your eye, maybe accidentally? On Netflix, it's there, but you don't even know about it, so you don't look for it.
Yeah.
And one of the cool things online that's happening more and more and more is also a huge detriment to our planet, I think. So it's like mixed, is that everything's based on your past experience on the internet. It's all done by bots, really. So Amazon says, oh, you like this, and this book, therefore you'll like these books as well, because other people who like the books you like this one. And same with Google, the search results are based on your past searches. And so the things you search for come to the top, and you don't find things outside of your normal circle of thought, which makes us get more and more in these insulated bubbles, which is kind of interesting nowadays, where there's no chance for any kind of dialogue. We live in a time now it's actually quite polarized politically, kind of like the 1960s. I think it's exacerbated now because people are in these little insulated social network bubbles where we only get our own thoughts and feelings, if you call them thoughts, they might be kind of minimal, and opinions in our own social, in quotes, circles.
Yeah. I think there's a difference with, like, so, like, if you like this book, other people also like these other books that like this book. I think those kind of recommendations are, I appreciate, because a lot of times you'll find something that you're like, I didn't know that author existed. I wouldn't have otherwise known that that author existed. But the Google altering results based on previous searches is actually, I think, a really big deal. I think they should not do that, like, at all.
Yeah, I think it's really awful. It does help in finding the things you want, so there's a plus side as well. But even with the books, you find things that you will like that you wouldn't have found otherwise, but you don't find things that are totally surprising outside of what you thought you wanted, but you find you actually do. So there's trade-offs in all these things. But, you look for, you just put Queen in a Google search box. Yeah. What comes up? Is it Queen Elizabeth? Is it the band? Is it drag queens? It's going to be based on your past searches. And those kind of things, you probably aren't going to be interested in the one you're not thinking of.
Yeah.
So there it's helpful. But when you're doing stuff politically or in various realms, if you don't get stuff outside of what you're thinking of, you're not going to be broadening your circle. You'll just be reinforcing what you already believe, which is not what our planet needs right now, I believe.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think people need to be more, open-minded, at least with regards to, like, actually listening and thinking about what other people say.
Yeah, otherwise it'll just continue to get more polarized.
Yeah, and then a lot of times, actually, you'll see where people will talk past each other. So, like, you'll say one thing, and then somebody will respond with something that's kind of related to what you said, but also has this other stuff that you didn't say. And then you then go, hey, I didn't say, like, any of that stuff. What are you talking about? So, like...
Right, but I just categorized you as one of them because of one of the key phrases you just said or whatever, and...
Yeah, you need to just listen and respond to very specifically what people are saying, because otherwise you're just going to be generalizing, and then you're going to start talking past each other because you just make this mental shortcut of, oh, you said this thing, so this means you probably also mean these things, which means that you think this thing, and that's... And then you just generalize a person and don't actually treat them as a distinct individual.
Yeah, and how many times have we seen that on email lists?
Sorry, I missed a phone call, apparently.
But I'm probably missing lots of messages.
But, yeah, so...
Yeah. So, I've been, unrelated. I did the graphics and ideas for the badges and the lanyards for the 11th Hope, and the lanyards had a cipher. We had three different ciphers on the badges. A third of the people got number one, a third got number two, and a third got number three, and all of them put together to get a secret message, and they put up posters all over that the first three will win some prizes. And before coming on here, I was going around asking vendors for some donations for prizes. And I'll be giving those away at the closing ceremonies.
So have we actually gotten our winners yet? Or are people still working it out?
A bunch of people figured it out. I didn't want to have anything too difficult. I'm not a crypto person. Thought it would be fun to do. There was an idea floated by on the list where we organized all this mess with 12 people for the last year and a half. Lots of work. But lots of fun too. So I wanted to have something simple, not some in-jokes or whatever. And the message that you get at the end is nothing profound. It's actually kind of stupid. But a bunch of people figured it out, and I thought that's really cool because it got people just to have a fun game out of something which is normally marketing at people.
Yeah.
And we just did our own custom lanyards with no marketing because that doesn't fit in with Hope. But having fun with stuff does.
Yeah. No, so I'm excited actually for the closing ceremony. Not that I want Hope to be over. If we could do... Well, no. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say if we could do this all the time, I would, but...
Well, we got Hackerspaces.
Actually, yeah, I should go hang out. I have one. It's kind of a pain. I live kind of close to Charlottesville, so there's, I think, a couple there, but it's like an hour drive, so it's like...
It's a long way.
Yeah. It's a little too long.
Yeah, and Hackerspaces are great, but, you know, getting all together here in person with people far-flung from all over the planet is just so amazingly wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. That was actually a nice tangent. We were like, hey, any questions or anything before we send you back? And then we spent like 15 to 20 minutes talking about... That was...
Random shit.
Yeah. I like random shit. Like, I think a lot of people are like, oh, things should be organized. And to a certain extent, they should be. But, you know, sometimes you just need to go with the flow and see where you end up.
Yeah.
It is 11:30 Eastern time, and you probably have other things you should be doing.
I do. I got to teach people this otter.
So we'll let you go. I'll put on some music while we wait for our next guest. And you're listening to Radio Statler.
Cool. See ya.